For those who might be heavily medicated, my name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
My sobriety day is November 19th, 1987. My home group is the sponsorship group. We're in Chatham, New Jersey. Sunday night, 8:30. It's an awesome meeting. It's an active meeting. It's a meeting that might get a little out of control. It's certainly enthusiastic. Sunday nights, we do a speakers meeting, and we have a speaker come in that has been through the 12 steps. Not all speakers have done that. They have a sponsor. They have some experience sponsoring other people, so you hear a message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Wednesday night, we have a big book meeting where we read a little bit of the big book and talk about our experience, not what we think about AA, not criticism of what other people are doing, but what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think it's a good meeting. The rest of the week, we go to rehabs, detoxes, jails, and other meetings, carry a message of hope and recovery. I think it's a good meeting. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. A couple of people here heard me speak last night at Augusta. Made it through the meeting unscathed. You never know the audience when you go to speak. I spoke in Vegas a few weeks ago, and I spoke at one meeting in Denver, and it was sort of like emceeing a rape. Some meetings where you go carry a message of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like, what the hell's a big book? You know what I mean? Not to sort of discourage anybody from doing AA. I love AA. I think that a good AA meeting ought to sort of resemble what's in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyhow, I'm not an alcoholic because I drank every day or drank in the morning or drank by myself. I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy doing that. I'm an alcoholic because my body processes alcohol differently than most folks. When I drink, every girl's a 10. Something happens, it's just absolutely marvelous. And the problem is that that's not the only thing that happens. When I take a drink, my outside perception of reality changes. You folks change. I can suddenly sing and dance and fight, and I might just be wrestling with a bush, but it feels damn good. What happens is that phenomenon of craving kicks in, where I take a drink and the drink takes a drink and I'm off to the races and I have no idea what the hell's going to happen. Now, it's not always bad, but it's totally unpredictable. And then I get sober and then I can't think my way out of drinking again. I have no mental defense against the first drink. Until I've been through the 12 steps, the big book, I really have no mental defense against first drink. Rehab, they told me, think it through. I don't do that so well. I get it down to between Jack Daniels, vodka, or rum, and I just pick one. I was first exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1985. Now my sobriety days in 1987. So something didn't work. It wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous being ineffective. It was me being ready to do Alcoholics Anonymous. I could stumble around Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time and talk about how I didn't hear a message of hope and recovery for a very long time. But the fact is that, at almost every meeting I've ever been to, there's been a big book at the meeting. And I could have looked at it any time I wanted. I'm a little bit different. I'm not wrapped too tight. My perception of reality isn't what other people would agree. Somebody could say something and hear something different than what I would hear. I've always had special abilities where I could see things about people that other people couldn't. Some people really believe that you should really get to know somebody, talk to them a little bit before you, say they're an asshole. I disagree. At 24 years sober, I can still go to the mall and think somebody should hit that son of a bitch. I'll have conversations with my sponsor, and I'll tell him about some conflict that I've had, and I'll share, about something she did or said, and and help try to narrow it down to exactly what she said. And I hate people like that. You have to talk to them about how they said it. You know, they weren't there to participate. They don't understand what this person has always been doing to get to you. They don't listen to the inflection of their voice and the facial expressions. And my sponsor might say I have an active imagination, that I'm delusional, that I'm like a 2-year-old. I don't see it that way. I notice that, even going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that when I miss a few meetings or I get distracted and I stop moving my feet, that I come to meetings and that it appears to me that you guys have been having secret meetings about me and that there's probably like a committee going somewhere, trying to make me feel bad, judging me, secretly looking at me. I don't have that extra layer of insulation that everybody else seems to have. I'm super, super sensitive to what people say. I have a tremendous amount of fear. This loneliness that I've suffered with for the vast majority of my life, except for when I'm drinking and participating in Alcoholics Anonymous, makes me audition to be in other people's lives. I remember being a little kid and wanting my friends to like me so much that I would buy them candy. I remember convincing my mom. I worked on her, trying to get her to buy me this leather jacket, and I just brutalized this woman with words. And she finally said, "Uncle," and bought me this leather jacket she couldn't afford. And I got to school and I was wearing it. And I walk in. I remember opening the door and this kid looked at me and he made fun of it. And I took it off and I threw it in the garbage can right there. And I never wore it again. And, I'm so hypersensitive to what other people think about me. I have this spiritual malady that cuts me off from me and you and me and God. And I notice that when I drink alcohol, this isn't alcohol, that goes away, that I feel connected in a way that's just absolutely marvelous. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous when they're trying to send me to AA, they're saying, if you just stop drinking, you'll be okay. If I'm not okay when I stop drinking, I'm not right. I have a lot of conflict. I always tell the guys I sponsor that, they can do anything I did in Alcoholics Anonymous, which means that they can't, throw a chair in a meeting after the first year. they can't get arrested after their ninth year. My first drink, okay, since I'll talk a little bit about drinking. Some of you here might still be drinking. I was 16 years old. This kid, Mark, calls me up, and he was a bad kid. I prefer bad kids. If you're really well-balanced, guy or girl, and you want to have a meaningful, deep conversation, and you want to talk about your family or holidays, and I don't know how to do that. I'll play along for a few minutes, but then what it seems like is you want to have sex with me. People, guy or girl, people freak me out, this guy calls me up. He goes, Jimmy, I got the case of Budweiser and some girls. Now, I was 16 years old. I've been trying to get married since I was 5. I'm thinking about this girl, Amy. Amy sat next to me in homeroom. Doug's here. Doug used to go out with Amy. I hated Doug. Right? It's like I'm sitting on the sidelines, I look over at her every day, and I just planning our life together. I never spoke to her. Just way too scared. Could you imagine? If I really, seriously, I remember being like a really little kid, and it was just like the end of Vietnam, and these priests were lighting themselves on fire. I always imagine that's what I would do if she turned me down. just to deal with the emotional pain. I don't mind getting kicked in the face. I don't mind getting beaten up, but don't embarrass me. Don't make me look stupid. So he calls me up. He goes, Jimmy, I had a case of Budweiser and some girls. And I was like, yeah, you don't have to say anymore. I'm ready. Let's go. And he comes and picks me up, and I'm all excited. I run out to the car, run down the car. Back door opens up. this girl hops out. I take one look at her, and I'm thinking, get back in the car before the neighbors see you. You know, I don't want you to get this wrong. I do have really low standards, like when no one's watching. Okay. But I looked at her. I was like, oh, you know, and she's like, hop in the middle, you know, and she's, you know, I played football with Doug and Tom and these guys. I thought I was pretty tough, but I didn't think I could take her. You know, I got in the middle, right? And I noticed on the other side was her sister, who was like probably the not so good looking one in the family. And I look back and forth. I'm like, oh, you know, but I look at her eyes. She's got pretty eyes. If I could just stick to the eyes, what the hell, you know? So I start making my moves. I'm trying to talk to her, and I'm crapping. I'm like stuttering and spitting on her. It's like I got Tourette's. I can't communicate. I'm really bad at doing this. I mean, believe me, if you were watching me trying to hit on a girl, it would be as uncomfortable for you as it was for me. Okay? It just wasn't going well. I was like, oh, forget it, you know. And I just look forward, and I'm thinking, geez, I get out of here. You know, maybe we'll hit a tree. I'll go through the windshield. This is just terrible, you know. And someone, you know, this kid Mark, I think it was, he offered me a beer, and I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I crack it up, and I start sipping. It wasn't very good. I mean, in high school, what do you get? You get beer that's been in the bushes for a few days. So it was a little skunky. I was like, ugh, you know. But I get it the first can down. I was like, I can't believe, you know, I got it down. I crush the can up, throw it on the floor, and someone offered me another one. I was like, oh, okay, whatever. I start sipping that one, you know, and I got that one down. I don't know if it was the second, the third, the fourth, or fifth beer, but I'll tell you, that very first night drunk, you could have diagnosed me as alcoholic, because what happens to me does not happen to everybody. You know, I remember drinking, all of a sudden I look over to my left, and this girl lost 15 pounds. I was like, whoa. And I started talking. I didn't think about what I was going to say and what she was going to say and what I was going to say to what she would say. And you know what I mean? Because usually when I'm talking to some girl and I'm like, I want her, but I know she's going to probably hurt my feelings. I'm prepared for that. Okay, I don't suffer by myself. I don't go down alone. You know what I mean? And she laughed, you know, and she said something, and I laughed, and you know, we're having a conversation. Now that's a pretty good deal for a guy who can't talk. You know, alcohol works. You know, and but I don't stop drinking. You know, a friend of mine said, you know, that grip that alcohol has on the alcoholic. You know, where what I've got planned later tonight, what I have planned tomorrow, what I have planned next week, it doesn't matter how important that is. When I put alcohol in my system, all bets are off. The future is a mystery, you know. And, you know, it's like this grip is so incredibly tight, I can't get away. I can't talk myself out of it. A friend of mine said it's like having sex with a gorilla. You're done when the gorilla's done. You know? I'm not getting away, you know. Next thing you know, we're making out. I'm like, oh, my God, Budweiser, the king of beers. This is fantastic, man. This is great. We're like, I'm in love, you know. I was like, you know, I finally got a girlfriend, you know, but I keep drinking. And next thing you know, I'm making out with her sister. Now, she's all pissed off, like, we're engaged. I'm like, what, you don't like your sister? You know, there's plenty to go around, you know. And, you know, I soon was to hit my first bottom. I'm laying face down in the parking lot. I got cinders on my tongue. You ever do that? You know, I got rocks in my face, in my chest, you know. And one of these girls, she's stepping on my back because apparently I said something. I don't know why, you know, what was going on. You know, maybe she's never heard of Jenny Craig. Yeah, I don't know what I said, you know what I mean? It could have been something about weight loss or facial hair. I have no idea, okay? But what's become apparent to me is that when I'm drinking, I'm the only one enjoying my drinking, you know? And I don't much care, you know? And that was my first bottom. But parking lots, believe me, very few people make it to AA because of one parking lot. You know, the first one's rough, you know, but just keep drinking, man. It's not so bad. You know what I mean? You know, fast forward, I remember my first car wreck. You know, I It was 50 foot of guardrail, a telephone pole, and two of my buddies in surgery. You know, that's pretty devastating. You know what I mean? These guys, I don't know if I really cared about them or I cared about what they were going to say about me. You know what I mean? If we could have kept it a secret, you know, I probably wouldn't have had so many regrets. That's the kind of selfishness that I have. You know, and, you know, I wasn't one of those people to swear that I would never drink and drive. I was convinced that I was a better driver when I was drinking. It certainly, when I drink, it relaxes me. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'd ever have the nerve to do like a high-speed pursuit sober. You know, that's pretty scary. There's a lot of things I've done driving I don't think I could do sober. I remember, you know, a couple other car wrecks. You know, one time we hit these trees and, like, you know, just totaled this BMW. Another time we hit this van head-on. I went through the windshield. And it gets to the point where I'm drinking, where it's like, I'm not dying. You know, some people drinking and driving and dying. You know, some people killing other people. I'm not doing any of that. You know, I'm just, you know, wrecking some cars, you know, having a good time. You know, this is what we do, you know. Other people, I don't remember who it was and the exact circumstances, but I recall this guy, like, whining and crying because I hit, like, a little, like, tree or mailbox or something, and about his shoulder hurting something. You know, I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? You know, look at the front. Look at the headlights. One's pointing toward the ground. One's pointing toward the trees. There's a piece of mailbox in the grill. There's dents on every side of my car. The front plate doesn't match the back plate. Right, you know I don't have a driver's license. The car's not insured. I'm shit-faced when you got in the car, and you're going to bitch at me? Buyer beware. you know. I mean, if you look at that car, how could you be shocked when it hits something? you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I can understand you have a brand-new, pristine, you know, car. But that thing, I'm hitting something, like, daily. Yeah, you know, the first time I get evicted is devastating. It's humiliating. You know, what do you do? You know, how do you talk your way out of? You know, how do you tell people? There's no, like, guide on, you know, what to do and how to do it. And, you know, the first time you get evicted, it's scary. You know, second time it's a little bit easier. And if you keep getting evicted, like I keep getting evicted, it gets easier. You know, the furniture is not. You don't have a lot of it after a while. You know what I mean? You learn. Yeah, I remember I moved into this place in Morristown, and, you know, people, I had this big party, and people come over, and they're like, dude, where's the furniture? I'm like, don't worry about it. We got booze, we got drugs, come on in. You know, we're getting drunk, we steal all the neighbor's lawn furniture. Problem solved, right? I remember I was showing some girl in my bedroom. You have to understand, this is not like a dump. This is like, in 1986, okay, it was like $2,300 a month rent, right? So there's a fireplace, sunken living room, washer, dryer. It was a beautiful place, right, in a nice neighborhood, right? And I'm showing this girl my bedroom. She goes, you have a chaise lounge for a bed? I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cool, huh? And you drink like I drink, getting evicted is, you know, you don't need an accountant, you know, to figure out why you're going to get evicted, you know. But again, it's like first month rent, month and a half security, that's 2.5 months. It takes them 5 months to throw you out. You double your money by not paying the rent. You know, my keen accounting skills. I'm getting used to that. And, you know, I remember I get drunk one night, and we're in New York, and we're scoring some drugs, and we get ripped off, and we're like, oh, tough guys, right? We don't do anything about it. But the next night, we get drunk, and then we decide that we're going back into New York. And then, we start robbing street dealers, right? And it just spun out of control. You know, the first couple, it wasn't bad, you know what I mean? But it if you've never done that, you're going to... It's, you know, there's easier ways to get money. when I drink, it gets messy, you know. The pain is so horrible when I stop, though. I can't imagine living life sober. I mean, I can understand the alcohol is a problem. Things get out of control. It gets really bad. But when I'm sober, things are worse. You know, forget about, like, just being nervous. I'm the guy, I could screw up, like, any relationship. You know what I mean? I mean, I go to you give me a nice job, I'm sober for a little while, they're paying me a lot of money, and, you know, for no reason, I'll start embezzling. You know what I mean? You know what? I'll do really well until the guy gives me a dirty look, or he'll ask me why I was late, and I've been early every day for a month, and now he wants to penalize me for being 5 minutes late, so I'll steal the fucking stapler. Right? You know, I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, and then of course as his punishments increase, so do mine. Right? Now, relationships. I mean, if I look at your life, I could see how you might get yourself in a jam. You know what I mean? I could see how, you know, maybe you shouldn't date that girl, you know, because she's married to a cop. Okay? I can't see that in me. Okay? Because it's always like, you don't understand. You know what I mean? I'm saving her. Or, you know, I have like this way of seeing reality that is just very, very messy. You know? And it's actually messier when I'm sober than when I'm drinking. You know, when I'm drinking, I can keep everything at bay. I'm not, you know, I drink myself to sleep. You know, it's just like medication. I'm getting normal. I'm getting okay. I can talk again. You know, before I started drinking, I couldn't do a book report in front of the class. I remember going to seventh grade dance. It was girls on one side, guys on the other. What could I do? I mean, first there's a couple kids out there, you know, like kind of nerdy kids. And, you know, it's one guy and girl dancing. We're like making fun of them. And that's fine. I don't mind making fun of them. But, you know, 20 minutes later, there's a few more people out there dancing. An hour later, there's a lot of people out there dancing, and I'm still trying to pick the girl who's likely to say yes, but not too embarrassing to be seen with. Okay? I would have, like I said, my standards are low. I would have gone with anyone. But I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say and what she's going to say and how I'm going to get her to dance and how I'm going to inflict as much emotional pain if she turns me down, okay, as the pain that I feel by being rejected. Now, I remember I picked out this one girl. I'm thinking, okay, she'll say yes. I sound out what I'm going to say, and I'm walking across the dance floor. I get halfway across the dance floor, and it dawns on me, you don't know how to dance. Mm. Oh, and I'm trying to intellectualize the moves that I'm going to make when I'm on the floor. And I see this kid over here. He's bouncing up and down. I think, I can do this. So I'm bouncing up and down, getting ready. I'm walking out there. I'm getting ready. And I see, you know, see this other kid. He's moving like this. I'm thinking, well, I'll mix it up a little bit, right? You know, I kind of look like that guy at Applebee's who had the seizure last night. You know, I was like, fuck, man. You know, I don't know how to do it. I'm pathetic. You know what I mean? I hope you're getting that picture that I'm really pathetic. Okay, and I don't have the skills that most people do to live successfully and happily, and I don't play well with others. Okay, when I drink, what happened very, very quickly, okay, in just a couple of years of drinking, I made my way to Wall Street. Okay, I got a job being a stockbroker. I quit college. Okay, within 6 months, I was one of the top guys at the firm. Within a year and a half, I was number, like, 8 perhaps in about 1,800 brokers. I was making more money a month than my dad was making in a year. Alcohol works. Okay? When I drink, alcohol taps me into this power that is absolutely marvelous and fantastic. I feel good drinking. Okay? It doesn't last long. I mean, you know, that phenomenon of craving is what gets me. You know, and of course, you know, I might mix it up with some South American agricultural products just to keep it going. You know what I mean? You know, alcohol gets messy. You know what I mean? I remember, you know, if you drink like I drink, your family will turn on you, your boss, your neighbors will turn on you, the local police department will pick on you all the time. My little sister, I love my little sister. She turned on me. And, you know, one night at dinner, she's like, oh, you know what Jimmy did last night? And I'm, you know how you try to piece it together? You're like, "What? Where was I?" You know? And she goes, well, I came in. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and Jimmy was over there peeing in the dishwasher. You know how you're going to deny it? And I'm thinking, oh, did I? You know, I'm so, well, maybe there were dishes in the sink. You know, what the hell? You know, and it's another disappointment in my family. You know, my life was pretty much crapping out. And I went to my first AA meeting, 1985, you know. And, it was funny. I was going out with this girl, and I wanted to break up with her. And she said, okay, I'll let you break up with me if you go to AA. Whoever, I've never heard that. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa. You know, I was like, okay. So I go to this meeting. Right? And I'm sitting there, and this speaker, I don't know where the hell they got this, but it was obvious that he got sober during Prohibition. I was like, does this guy even know that it's legal now? He says, I drank for 30 years. And I'm like, 30 years? I'm not getting screwed out of my other 21 years of drinking. I drank for 9. Okay, how do you keep it going, you know? That's what I wanted to learn in AA. You know, if this guy could drink for 30 years, there's no reason we all can't drink for 30 years. I had the idea, coming to AA, like, you know, sending me to AA was like taking your dog to get neutered. You know, it's like, oh, I hope you had a good run, Fido. It's all over. You know, this is the place. I figured, you know, we were the people who had too much fun. And this is where we pay it back. You know, come on, who hasn't been sentenced? You know, but the fact is that if you can't get a better buzz in Alcoholics Anonymous than you can on the street, you'll be on the street, right? I mean, that's it. No one sticks around AA unless you're going to have a buzz here, unless it's good, unless you feel good here, unless you can get the power here that I can get from alcohol and drugs. If I can't plug into a power here that allow me to dance, you know, that allow me to sing, allow me to fight, you know, allow me to do anything, I know where to get it. Okay? I'm looking for the power. Lack of power is my dilemma. I got to have the power, you know. And in AA, they're talking about God. Now, that's a problem if you're atheist. I was atheist, okay? I don't buy it, you know. I understand you believe in God. Okay, that's nice for you. I mean, I understand. I used to believe in Santa Claus. Okay? Other mythical creatures, that's fine. The Easter Bunny, perhaps? Okay? But I'm not... I was blessed with a level of intelligence, okay? I don't get it. I'm not going to... You know, I want to believe. I want to feel better. I want to feel the magic I used to feel when I had Santa Claus, okay? But it's not happening, right? I don't get it, you know? I don't know what time it is, but... 7:35. Okay, so somebody tell me when there's like 5 minutes left. The very first meeting, I was convinced that if I ever became alcoholic, I'd have a place to go. Okay? That was my take-home, man. You know what I mean? I mean, certainly I wasn't ready to stop. I mean, this guy had a very well-developed life, okay? His life was like a plane, you know, a jet. It goes down the end of the runway, takes off, he gets a house, a business, family, and all this stuff, and he has a few too many drinks, and he comes in for a rough landing. Now, my plane goes down the end of the runway, right into the weeds, okay? I'm not getting off the ground. Okay, this guy, he's married, he has kids. Married? What a concept that was. I mean, I can't get past the part in a relationship where she doesn't leave when I wet the bed. Okay? I mean, don't get me wrong. I can get a girlfriend, okay? I can get her home from the bar just fine. Get her to spend the night. But when she wakes up covered in urine... I don't know. How do you talk your way out of that? You know what I mean? I remember one girl, I blamed her. So what I did was I kept drinking. I wasn't ready to get sober. You know, 2 years later, I find myself in rehab. Now, my boss was a little upset. Apparently, someone took about $55,000 of his money and gave it to my Coke dealer. Now, I was trying to convince my boss it was a loan, and he made me pay him back, so I was right. He told me I needed to do something, and you know, one thing led to another. I went to see some. He sent me to see some priest. You know, well, I'm not religious. At the time, I was, you know, atheist. I wasn't Catholic. But I knew he was very involved in teaching Sunday school. He studied to be a priest at one point. And so when he told me I had a problem with alcohol and drugs and I was a mess, and, you know, what the first thing that came out of my mouth was, yes, I do. I just need to see a priest. And he bought it, you know. So he sent me to see some priest in Brooklyn. And I looked at this guy, and I'm thinking, oh, nice guy. Really gentle, well-spoken, articulate, intelligent guy. Obviously had, like, a very high IQ, and, you know, we started talking a little bit. He asked me why I was there. I said, well, it was, you know, at the time, November of 1987, and the market had crashed in October. Our firm lost a lot of money. That's how my boss found out that some money was missing, because he did an audit on everything. And I told him, I said, well, he seems like he's overreacting, you know, to what happened in the market. He thinks I have, like, a drinking problem, but I work on Wall Street. It's the 80s. Everybody's drinking, you know? What's the big deal? So he goes, well, would you mind if I asked you about your drinking? And I'm like, yeah, okay. So he says, well, how often do you get drunk? Now, if you're ever asked how often you get drunk, that's really a trick question, okay? Okay. I might be drinking a lot recently, okay? But if you're like a statistician, you want to average back to the times that you weren't drinking to even it out a little bit. So I told him that I got drunk perhaps 3 times a week. Didn't seem bad. I mean, after all, sometimes, you know, if I'm drinking, I might get drunk 3 times in a day. you know, if you're puking by noon, you know, you could be drunk again by 7. Okay? So, you know, he goes, oh, okay. He said, well, you ever have a car crash? You know, you ever drive drunk? You know, I go, well, perhaps. He goes, well, how often do you drive drunk? And I thought, well, I hadn't had a license in 5 years, and I didn't have a car. But on occasion, I would borrow other people's. Like, say you're at a party, there's keys on the counter, everyone's passed out. I'll take the car, okay? And nobody's using it. He wouldn't mind, you know? So I told him maybe once a week I'd drive drunk, you know? But I would drive drunk every day if you let me, if I had a car or if access to it. You know, I love driving and drinking. He goes, okay. He goes, well, you ever do any other, you know, drugs or anything? I say, oh, perhaps like once a month, you know, and I just kind of lowballed everything, and he goes, oh, okay, well, I've got some really bad news for you. I'm like, what? I haven't told him anything. You know, I was like, he goes, well, listening to your story, you know, he asked me if I was in some car wrecks. I told him I was in a bunch of car wrecks, and he goes, listening to your story, I have to let you know that you're an alcoholic, and you can never safely drink again. So I looked back at him, and I noticed that his suit was polyester. Okay? I noticed that he had a space between his teeth. I was thinking about the headlines where the priests were molesting all these kids. And I was thinking, I don't know if I could trust this guy. All right? And I was getting pretty pissed at him. I was actually thinking about beating him up. And I was like, you know, this guy's a jerk. You know, I'm like, man, I'm getting pissed. And he goes, calm down. He's like really trying to calm me down. He goes, well, just imagine, what do you want to do with your life? I said, well, I want to have fun. That was always the response I would give. I just want to have fun. He goes, well, what does that mean? Do you ever want to have a family? I said, yeah, I'd like to get married, have kids. And he said, could you imagine that, you know, one day you just have a couple of drinks and you find yourself with your kid in the back of the car, getting in a car crash and your kid getting killed? And I just had this moment of clarity, thinking, that could easily happen. You know, I'm crashing all the time. You know, I'm drinking all the time. I'm driving all the time. I'm crashing all the time. I mean, how could, statistically, it probably had to happen. You know, I just saw the truth for 1 second. And I was like, yeah. And it just hit me. I'm like, oh, my God. I said, I'm an alcoholic. Holy shit. Oh, my God. He goes, you can't drink. And I said, okay. I go back to work. I tell my boss, I'm an alcoholic. He goes, no shit. I said, I just don't have to drink. you know? And I was like, okay, okay. So I went home. I don't know what the hell happened, but I was shit-faced by 10 o'clock. Okay? Man, I don't know. I remember going to the bar, and I think what it is it should be illegal, okay, to charge $3 for a soda and $2 for a beer. Mm. You know, I think they're just ripping alcoholics off. So I found myself drunk. The next day, I was late for work. I'm all hungover again. And I discovered that I couldn't stop drinking. You know, that was like the first time I tried to really stop drinking. You know, and then what happened very quickly after that is I would drink all night and I wouldn't get drunk. And I couldn't shut my head off. I couldn't stop thinking, you know. And then no matter what I would drink, I just started chugging Jack Daniels. And I couldn't stop thinking, you know. And the next night I'd have like just like three beers and I'd be slurring my words. I'd be staggered. You know, my body started to it was processing alcohol in just very bizarre ways. It was very unpredictable. A little bit would get me wasted and a lot would, nothing would happen. Or it would be vice versa. I had no idea what the hell was going to happen and how much I could tolerate that night. And what happened in November 1987, I found myself in rehab. And I needed to regroup. You know, those periods of time where I would just stop drinking for a little while. And then I would I'd be able to get back at it, you know. But I couldn't stop. So I had to take some time off. I had no intention of really stopping. You know, I could not picture my life without drinking. So I went to rehab. Some guy comes in from AA. He had like 3 years sober, which seemed entirely excessive. Okay, like this guy. How? I mean, 3 years is a really long time to suffer. Okay, I couldn't imagine not drinking for 3 years. But he seemed pretty happy, and I didn't understand. He said, you know, 3 years ago I got down on my knees and I said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in. From that day to this day, I've not picked up a drink. I think there might be a connection. I was like, okay, I guess if I prayed, so long as I don't have to believe. Okay? And that's what I did. The next morning I got down on my knees and said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in. And from that day to this day, I've not picked up a drink. I think there might be a connection. Now, it's been more than 24 years. And I wish that's all I had to do. And there was no burning bush. There was no white light. There was nothing like that. All that happened was I was willing to follow some direction not of my own making. In order for me to have a new experience, I have to take new action. Now, if that action is hindered by my thinking of what I think is a good idea, you can't give me like a buffet in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't say, oh, you know, take what you want and leave the rest. You know, I'm not going to get sober. I got to take action. That's very predictive. Again, so I got to take the actions outlined in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, because that is the recipe. That is the recipe for getting sober. I mean, you know, I see the picture of the you know, of the cake in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like happy, joyous, and free, walking hand in hand with our Creator. You know, rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. All that stuff, right? You know, but I see a lot of people in AA whose lives are nothing like that. And it reminds me of how I cook. Okay? When I cook, say there's a recipe and there's a cake, and it looks very logical. Okay? But somewhat inconvenient. Okay? Now, it says use 4 eggs. I have 5 left. I'm not going to eat just 1 egg, so I put all 5 in. Right? It says 2 cups of flour. I have 1.5. Whatever. You know, it says, you know, cup of sugar, and I have half a cup, but I have some brown sugar. I'll throw that in. Maybe a little bit of sweet and low. What the hell, you know? Go down. I'll start this shit up, right? It says preheat the oven at 450, okay? Lower it to 375. Cook for 45 minutes. I said 45. I don't have 45. I have a half hour. I'll leave it at 450, right? Now, if you want to taste my cake, it's not going to taste nor look like what you would see in the recipe book. Okay? I mean, and if you look at some lives, like my life, when I'm not active in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm not sponsoring people in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm not checking in, when I'm not praying, when I'm not meditating, when I'm not inconveniencing myself for other alcoholics, I'm not happy, joyous, and free. My life sucks. Okay, I'm like every like unemployed bum bitching at the guy with the Mercedes driving by. What a jerk! What a that? Because I want what he has, but I'm not willing to do the work to get it. Okay? In Alcoholics Anonymous, I want the buzz, man. I got to do what's necessary. You know? I get out of rehab, right? I go to my first meeting, and the guy, they told me in rehab, put your hand up, you know, when you go to a meeting, and ask for rides. Tell them you're new, tell them you're out of rehab, and you need rides. I was like, that's a bad idea. You know, it was like 10 degrees, though, and I didn't have a ride home. I figured, okay, what the hell? All right, so I put my hand up. I said, Jim, alcoholic, just got to rehab. I need rides at meetings. Everybody can help me. Great. That's it. They told me to say that in rehab. So after the meeting, I walk outside. I expect a whole line of people to choose from, right? No one's there. I see some lady come out. She looks at me. I look at her. She, like, holds on to her pocketbook extra tight and runs toward her car. I'm like, what a bitch, you know? Some guy comes out. He walks right by me. I think, I hate AA, these hypocrites. They ask, you know, can you believe that? I'm the new guy. Give me a ride home, God damn it, you know? You know, I'm like, what the hell? You know, next week I'll come early to the meeting. I'll put 100 hits of acid in the coffee pot. We'll finally have a good meeting. All right? I was thinking, nah, I don't have the money for that. You know, what I'll do is I'll come a little late. I'll when you're all in at the meeting, you know, praying and, you know, worshiping Jesus or whatever the hell you're doing in there, I'll be outside slashing all your tires in the parking lot. Then after the meeting, we could all walk home together. Right? And what happened was some guy just came walking out just that second and said, I can give you rides. I was like, oh, shit. You know? I started talking to him for a second. And it ends up he lives two blocks from where my mom lived, where I was sleeping on the couch. And I was thinking, oh, no, there's not a God, is there? I don't mind praying, but I don't really want a God. You know, that would mean I was wrong. You know? In fact, you know, if you're atheist, if you're here in AA and you're atheist, I have some bad news, okay? If you change your definition of God to something you believe in, you can no longer be an atheist, okay? If you change your definition, say you believe in love or luck or in the magic in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that becomes your definition for God, you're screwed, okay? Because that's what I did. I just changed my definition. I heard all the ideas, you know, these ideas about what God was and maybe he was and wasn't, and I just changed my definition, you know. And then what happened was is God started appearing everywhere, you know, and the coincidences were just absolutely fantastic. So anyway, this guy gives me a ride home, and, we stop at the diner, some other guys from AA. I didn't really want to hang out with those guys. I don't like letting people know where I live, what my real name is, because it's just a matter of time before you're looking for me. You know what I mean? If you're going to be my friend toward the end of my drinking, you're going to come looking for me. Okay? Because I don't really pay attention to boundaries, what's your property, who you're married to. You know, when I'm drinking, it's a free-for-all. You know? And a lot of people, you know, come looking for me when I'm drinking. You know, anyway, the guy drops me off. He says, you know, I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7. And I'm thinking, how does he know I don't have plans? You know, I had nothing going on. My schedule was open. You know? So I was like, okay. You know, he comes, picks me up, drags me to a meeting, sits me in the front row. He sits next to me. Secretary's like, any newcomers? He goes to me, that's you. I'm like, mind your own damn business. Leave me alone. You know, I got it, you know. Secretary's like, no newcomers? The guy assaulted me. He elbowed me. He went, ugh! And I was like, ow! Right in the liver. I was like, ow! Secretary's like, yes? I was like, oh, shit. Jim, alcoholic, 29 days sober. Everyone's thunderous applause. It was like clapping. Everybody's like, all right! Overnight, I was like a rock star in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, well, I'm the man. You know, I don't mind if you treat me special all the time. You know, if it's not too much to ask, if you could treat me like it's my birthday every day, I would really appreciate it. And I feel like that's what I deserve. Okay? Maybe other people don't need the love that I... You know what it's like to live your whole life knowing that nobody ever really loved you? You know, they can never love. I was like this, like sinkhole for love. You know what I mean? You buy me shit, treat me. But the one day you just, like, forget to treat me special. I'm like, what are they doing to me? You know, it's like I would rather be beaten, you know. And so the next day, of course, I'm at the meeting, you know. Secretary, is anybody new? I'm like, over here, you know. You know, 30 days sober, everyone's clapping. And that goes on pretty well, you know, really well for a while until this kid Billy gets out of rehab. Anybody new? He beat me to the draw. Billy, alcoholic, 17 days sober. All of a sudden, there's a thunderous applause for him. I look at the guy, I'm thinking, I go to the guy next to me. I don't even think he's alcoholic. Yeah. You know, if he is, he's probably still drinking. Look at him. Look at him. Let's get back to the main course, right? You know, because I love the attention. You know, and, you know, if you're new, I can tell you, I don't know if that goes away. You know, I was telling a story last night. I went to this wedding, you know. This guy and a girl in our home group got married, and of course, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, so they had the kid before the wedding, okay? And they asked me to be godfather, pretty good honor. I was in the wedding, and I have this tuxedo on at the wedding, right? And I'm like, oh, look at me, look at me. And some guy comes up, I hadn't seen him in a few years, goes, Jim, you look great, good, look, yeah. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Someone else comes up, oh, Jim, good to see you. Oh, yeah, you look good. Yeah, I'm talking to these guys, oh, yeah. And then the bride walks in. Everybody starts looking at her. I'm like, well, what about me? And I'm looking over at the bride thinking, you whore. I remember when you got sober. Anyway, hey, I only had 22 years at the time. So there's hope for growth. Anyhow, I'm running around AA, and what's happening is that I feel good in AA. I like AA meetings. I don't, you know, I like the atmosphere. I like the fellowship. I like the laugh and the giggle. You know what I mean? What it's like when I'm new, you know, in AA, is I'm laying in bed. I wake up in the morning, and it's like waking up in oncoming traffic. It's like this idea is just like, oh, IRS, oh. And then I've got like warrants from towns I've never been to. I just like, oh, you know, I'm like, wait, I haven't even opened my eyes. My feet haven't hit the floor, and I'm having like a panic attack. I'm like, and all I have to do is I got to hold on like 9 or 10 hours till I get to the AA meeting, okay? Because I know like halfway through the meeting, some guy's going to say something totally inappropriate, and I'm going to go, and I'll take the first full breath of the day, you know, and I'll like, and I'll be okay. But what happens is if you're new and you have that experience at AA, it's great, but it doesn't last long. Coming to AA and not working the steps is like going to a bar and not drinking. It's only good for a little while. You can only get so lucky. You know what I'm saying? You know, whether you find a drunk girl in AA or at the bar, you know, but that's the best you're going to do, okay? But I'll tell you, when I go to a bar, I got to drink. I got to drink. That's why I'm there, you know what I mean? We don't go to a whorehouse to listen to the piano player, okay? Okay? I don't care how much you like music, okay? Okay? I come to AA because I need the buzz, man. So I go to a meeting, right, and I'm going to discussion meeting. I'm holding on all day. Some lady's sharing about her cat. She goes, my cat's sick. I'm like, is your cat an alcoholic? Right? She goes, I think my cat's going to die. I'm like, it is. Right? I hear some other guy. He's like, I don't think I was breastfed. I was like, are you kidding me? Was this recent? Let's talk about the guy. Let's talk about the IRS. Let's talk about felonies. Let's talk about getting your life together. Let's talk about warrants. Let's say that. And I leave the meeting. I'm crazier than I was when I got there. All right? One night, a guy drops me off at home. I'm like, and I'm hanging on. I'm sitting at the kitchen table. If I stay at the kitchen table, I won't get drunk. I got to stay at the kitchen. I just can't move from the table. I'll hold on to the... And it's like, it's 10 o'clock, and I look at the clock, it's 11 o'clock, and then it's 12 o'clock, and then it's 1 o'clock. I'm like, and I'm thinking about where my mom's pocketbook was. I had this thing going with my mom. Now, at first, your family loves you. You get out of rehab. They're all like, oh, you're doing so well. You know, Jimmy, did you notice I left my pocketbook on the counter? We trust you. My mom and I, we had this pocketbook thing going since high school. Because I remember one day she goes, Jimmy, you know, I'm going to the mall. I'm buying a new pocketbook. You want to come? And I'm like, she goes, well, I figured maybe you'd want to pick it out. You're in it more than I am. And now she trusts me, right? But then she's like looking at me weird, like, you know, she wants me to go to work, and she's always been disappointed. And all these ideas about what she's thinking about me are just starting to eat me alive, okay? And what happens is I'm going crazy, you know? I call up this guy at 1 o'clock in the morning. He's a good member of AA. And what happens is, you know, he answers the phone at 1 o'clock, okay? He's not screening my call. He answers it, you know? I'm like, hey, how you doing? He's like, who's this? I said, Jimmy Bach. I go, I didn't wake you, did I? And he lied. He said, no. He goes, what's going on? I was like, nothing. He's like, do you want to come by? I'm like, okay. And I hung up. That was the quickest hang up you've ever, what happened if he changed his mind? You know, I hung up, ran downstairs, opened the garage. I stole my little sister's purple swim with the bell in the basket and fringes on the handlebar. I raced over to the guy's house, right? I get there, I bang on the door. He's like, come on in, sit down. He makes me a sandwich. He did something radically different than all the therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists. Okay, if you're like me, if you think like I do, they're going to send you to see people. Okay, and they mean well, okay. But how can you really possibly be honest with these people? They'll say things like just like trick questions. It's like, Jim, how you doing? I'm like, before you ask me when, you ask me or now. You know, and then, you know, it's like I just they don't think that it's all that common or normal to have homicidal thoughts. You know what I mean? I mean, I could just think about, like, killing somebody just because they embarrassed me. You know what I mean? Apparently, that's not common outside these meetings. Okay? The insecurities. I try to be honest, but even with these therapists and psychiatrists, like, I can't be honest because I'm too terrified they're going to judge me. You know, how the hell can you? You know, I get really close, and then they start writing. I'm like, I didn't know. I'm gonna go off record. Yeah. He's like, let me explain that part. You know, I'm terrified. And what this guy did was radically different than every therapist. Because what he did was he started telling me his story. You know, he's like, oh, you're working in New York? Yeah. A lot of drinking in New York? Oh yeah. He went back and forth. He goes, must be tough getting sober in New York. And I go, oh yeah, you have no idea. He goes, yeah, I got sober in New York. I looked at him. I was like, I couldn't believe anybody possibly could get sober working in New York. He's like, yeah, one night we're out drinking. I was like, yeah? He goes, well, we're out. We're in the back of this cab. We were shit-faced, man. You know, next thing you know, another cab comes around the corner, smashes in the cab. I go, yeah, so? He said, well, the driver got out. The two drivers arguing back and forth. He said, I got tired of waiting, jumped up front and took the cab. I was like, that's cool, okay? That is very cool. Can you get a sponsor who stole cars? I mean, you could talk to the guy a little bit. You know what I mean? You know, he's like, and I relaxed. That was the first time I felt comfortable, you know. He goes, you know, next thing you know, we're in the tombs. I look at this guy. This guy in the tombs, he was arrested in the jail in New York. I was like, oh. He said, yeah, they had us shackled. I was like, I'm just remembering, you know, just glimpses of my past. And he goes, yeah, he said it was kind of odd. I said, why is that? He said, there was a woman on each side. I said, wait a minute. They separate the men and the women. He said, well, I looked down, they had really big hands. I was like, he said, I looked up and they had Adam's apples. I was like, oh my God. Next thing you know, I was telling him a story. I said, that's nothing. One night I was down by Washington Square Park, drinking a little bit. Next thing you know, I'm chasing this transvestite around the park with a hatchet. Right? Now, you can't bring that to therapy. All right? You know, you bring that story to therapy, you know what they're going to say? Jim, why don't you explain the series of events that led up to the chase? Now, that's not something I want to talk about. Yeah? I mean, I don't mind telling you now. It's a perfectly good explanation. I wanted my money back. All right? All right? He looks at me. He looks at me. He laughs. This guy told me the sexual escapade that would have scared Jeffrey Dahmer. I was like, you what? This guy's a freak, man. I'm going to get the hell out of here. I can't believe it. I thought AA was a good outfit. This guy, I'm getting that. When he goes to the bathroom, man, I'm out of here. Right? And I thought about it for a couple minutes, and I was thinking, wait a minute, I did the same thing. I'm not going to tell him. He'll judge me. Right? So, you know, I told him another one. He told me another one. I told him the story about it Saturday morning. I was drinking one day, just a little bit of beer, but someone pulled out some Jack Daniels, and the beast was already awake. So he started drinking. You know, I'm just drinking. I'm chugging Jack. And this guy's hitchhiking over in Denville on Route 10, and we decided to pick him up. And a couple minutes later, we decided to keep him. Now, you can't bring that to therapy. You got to worry about, like, statute of limitations and all the. I don't know what they have to report. You know, I mean, it wasn't real kidnapping. You know what I mean? He was over 18. We let him go. No ransom. You know. We kept him for a little while, right? So anyway, that went back and forth. An hour and a half later, this guy knew about me, okay, you know, more than, you know, in an hour and a half, more than 20 years of therapists combined. I looked up from his shoes. I noticed he had blue eyes, and I was different. I tapped in to the magic in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's when you guys share with me who you are, what you are, that allow me to come out of my shell and be honest for the first time I could ever remember. And by doing that, I come alive. And I tap into a connection and a closeness with other human beings that I didn't know was possible. I mean, drinking comes, it's close second, but it's not as good. You know, and I'll finish up with this. You know, 1% of my recovery is going through the steps with a sponsor. The other 99% is taking other guys through the steps. You know, I mean, you want to look at how good your sobriety is. Look at, when's the last time you had a wet drunk in your car? You know, when's the last time you saw a seizure? You know what I mean? When's, you know, when's the last time you had a new guy, like, steal your television? You know, there's a book, you know, there's a page in the book that talks about burning mattresses, you know, many, you know, sleep, you know, lost night sleep, and that's pretty typical, you know, in our program. I mean, I want the buzz. You know, I want the best. You know, like, I want the Mercedes, you know. Like, when I worked on Wall Street, I want it. I want it all. I want the money. You know, I want it all. Okay? Who did I get to teach me? A guy who is rich. Okay? A guy who's making a few million dollars a year. I just teach me what to do. The guy told me how to dress, what to read. He told me exactly how to conduct myself. Same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor. He told me where to sit, what to say, what to read. He told me what to do and how to do it. Okay? In order to get what he had. Now, that's the deal. It's just a principle. This isn't magic. You know what I mean? A lot of people don't believe in strong sponsorship. I do. I want somebody to help save me from me. Mm-hmm. I'm the enemy. I am the bad guy here, okay? I need help to save me from me, you know? And that's what we, you know, have sponsors for, okay? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything good in my life is a direct result of being here with you guys. My life, where it was and where it is today, you just can't get there. You know, I want to appreciate. You know, I want to thank you, Rob and Joe, for having me speak up here. It's a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's it. Thanks.